Today on Tristan Storytime, it's our Season 3 premiere with three times more reasons to use your imaginations. First up, in the tale of Mrs. Tittlemouse, it's a never-ending war against dirt, muck, and grime as she tries desperately to keep her house clean. Then, in The Three Brothers, the man's three sons compete in a friendly competition to see which of them will inherit their father's house. Next, an ailing farmer requests his sons to dig up some valuable treasure, followed by a nice quiet nursery rhyme which will help put even the most active babies to sleep. And finally, we go into the poetry corner and dig up Edgar Allan Poe's famous poem, The Raven. The long wait is finally over, for a brand new season of great stories begins right now. Hello, everyone, and welcome once again to Tristan Storytime. I'm your host, Tristan Gardner, and I'm certainly glad you could join me today. We've got some great stories picked out, and I want to extend an invitation to use your imaginations as I read them. So without any further ado, let's get the show on the road. In other words, on with the stories! Here is a story based on tidiness. And one Mrs. Tittlemouse is the star of this story. You may recall her taking part in the tale of the Flopsy Bunnies 2 years ago. And all she wants to do is to keep her house neat and tidy, just like everybody does. It's all part of every homeowner's never-ending war against dirt, muck, grease, and grime. But when uninvited guests invite themselves into her home, she gets upset, and for a very good reason. Let's read this story together and we'll better understand what I'm talking about. Listen to the tale of Mrs. Tittlemouse, written and illustrated by Beatrix Potter. Once upon a time, there was a wood mouse, and her name was Mrs. Tittlemouse. She lived in a bank under a hedge. Such a funny house! There were yards and yards of sandy passages leading to storerooms and nut cellars and seed cellars, all amongst the roots of the hedge. There was a kitchen, a parlor, a pantry, and a larder. Also, there was Mrs. Tittlemouse's bedroom, where she slept in a little box bed. Mrs. Tittlemouse was a most terribly tidy, particular little mouse, always sweeping and dusting the soft, sandy floors. Sometimes, a beetle lost his way in the passages.
"Shh, shh, little dirty feet,"
said Mrs. Tittlemouse, clattering her dustpan. And one day, a little old woman ran up and down in a red, spotty cloak.
"Your house is on fire, Mother Ladybird. Fly away home to your children."
Another day, a big fat spider came into shelter from the rain.
"Beg pardon, is this not Miss Muffet's?"
"Go away, you bold bad spider, leaving ends of cobweb all over my nice clean house."
She bundled the spider out of the window. He let himself down the hedge with a long, thin bit of string. Mrs. Tittlemouse went on her way to a distant storeroom to fetch cherry stones and thistle down seed for dinner. All along the passage, she sniffed and looked at the floor.
"I smell a smell of honey. Is it the cowslips outside in the hedge? I am sure I can see the marks of little dirty feet."
Suddenly, round a corner, she met Babbity Bumble. Said the bumblebee. Mrs. Tittlemouse looked at her severely. She wished that she had a broom.
"Good day, Babbity Bumble. I should be glad to buy some beeswax. But what are you doing down here? Why do you always come in at a window and say bzz, 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 bzz?"
Mrs. Tittlemouse began to get cross. Replied Babbity Bumble in a peevish squeak. She sidled down a passage and disappeared into a storeroom which had been used for acorns. Mrs. Tittlemouse had eaten the acorns before Christmas. The storeroom ought to have been empty, but it was full of untidy dry moss. Mrs. Tittlemouse began to pull out the moss. three or four other bees put their heads out and buzzed fiercely.
I am not in the habit of letting lodgings. This is an intrusion,
said Mrs. Tittlemouse.
I will have them turned out. I wonder who would help me. I will not have Mr. Jackson. He never wipes his feet.
Mrs. Tittlemouse decided to leave the bees till after dinner. When she got back to the parlor, she heard someone coughing in a fat voice. And there sat Mr. Jackson himself. He was sitting all over a small rocking chair, twiddling his thumbs and smiling with his feet on the fender. He lived in a drain below the hedge in a very dirty wet ditch.
How do you do, Mr. Jackson? Deary me, you have gotten very wet.
Thank you, Mrs. Tittlemouse. I'll sit a while and dry myself,
said Mr. Jackson. He sat and smiled, and the water dripped off his coattails. Mrs. Tittlemouse went round with a mop. He sat such a while that he had to be asked if he would take some dinner. First, she offered him cherry stones.
Thank you, Mrs. Tittlemouse. No teeth,
said Mr. Jackson. He opened his mouth most unnecessarily wide. He certainly had not a tooth in his head. Then she offered him thistledown seed.
Tiddly widdly widdly,
said Mr. Jackson. He blew the thistledown all over the room.
Thank you, Mrs. Tittlemouse. Now what I really, really should like would be a little dish of honey.
I am afraid I have not got any, Mr. Jackson,
said Mrs. Tittlemouse.
Tiddly widdly widdly, Mrs. Tittlemouse,
said the smiling Mr. Jackson.
I can smell it. That is why I came to call.
Mr. Jackson rose ponderously from the table and began to look into the cupboards. Mrs. Tittlemouse followed him with a dishcloth to wipe his large wet footmarks off the parlor floor. When he had convinced himself that there was no honey in the cupboards, he began to walk down the passage.
Indeed, you will stick fast, Mr. Jackson.
Tiddly widdly widdly, Mrs. Tittlemouse.
First he squeezed into the pantry.
Tiddly widdly widdly, no honey, Mrs. Tittlemouse.
There were three creepy crawly people hiding in the plate rack. Two of them got away, but the littlest he caught. Then he squeezed into the larder. Miss Butterfly was tasting the sugar, but she flew away out of the window.
Tiddly widdly widdly, Mrs. Tittlemouse. You seem to have plenty of visitors.
And without my invitation,
said Mrs. Thomasina Tittlemouse. They went along the sandy passage.
Tiddly widdly.
He met Babbity round a corner and snapped her up and put her down again.
I do not like bumblebees. They are all over bristles,
said Mr. Jackson, wiping his mouth with his coat sleeve.
Yeah, you nasty old toad,
shrieked Babbity Bumble.
I shall go distracted,
scolded Mrs. Tittlemouse. She shut herself up in the nut cellar while Mr. Jackson pulled out the bee's nest. He seemed to have no objection to stings. When Mrs. Tittlemouse ventured to come out, everybody had got away. But the untidiness was something dreadful.
Never did I see such a mess. Smears of honey and moss and thistledown and marks of big and little dirty feet all over my nice clean house.
She gathered up the moss and the remains of the beeswax. Then she went out and fetched some twigs to partly close up the front door.
I will make it too small for Mr. Jackson.
She fetched soft soap and flannel and a new scrubbing brush from the storeroom. But she was too tired to do any more. First she fell asleep in her chair, and then she went to bed.
Will it ever be tidy again?
Said poor Mrs. Tittlemouse. Next morning, she got up very early and began a spring cleaning, which lasted a fortnight. She swept and scrubbed and dusted, and she rubbed up the furniture with beeswax and polished her little tin spoons. When it was all beautifully neat and clean, she gave a party to five other little mice, without Mr. Jackson. He smelt the party and came up the bank, but he could not squeeze in at the door. So they handed him out acorn cupfuls of honeydew through the window, and he was not at all offended. He sat outside in the sun and said,
"Tiddly widdly widdly, you are very good health, Mrs. Tittlemouse."
As you probably know by now, Mrs. Tittlemouse's kindness is a survival strategy against her intruders. Her niceness is a decision, a strategy of social interaction, not a character trait. Don't move a muscle. There are more stories to come as Tristan Storytime continues. A perfect fairy tale for season 3 of our show is this one, where three brothers come into the picture. They all prove their skills to their father in order to find out which one of them is the best, the one who will inherit their father's house, the greatest of all time. Okay, perhaps I'm going overboard here, but I'm going to go ahead and read the story of the three brothers, one of childhood's favorites and fairy stories, which is edited by Hamilton Wright Mabee, Edward Everett Hale, and William Byron Forbush, and assisted by Jenny Ellis Burdick. There was once a man who had three sons, but no fortune except the house he lived in. Now each of them wanted to have the house after his death, but their father was just as fond of one as of the other and did not know how to treat them all fairly. He did not want to sell the house because it had belonged to his forefathers, or he might have divided the money between them. At last an idea came into his head, and he said to his sons,
"Go out into the world and each learn a trade, and when you come home, the one who makes the best use of his handicraft shall have the house."
The sons were quite content with this plan, and the eldest decided to be a farrier, the second a barber, and the third a fencing master. They fixed a time when they would all meet at home again, and then they set off. It so happened that they each found a clever master with whom they learned their business thoroughly. The farrier shod the king's horses, and he thought, "I shall certainly be the one to have the house." The barber shaved nobody but grand gentlemen, so he thought it would fall to him. The fencing master got many blows, but he set his teeth and would not let himself be put out because he thought, "If I am afraid of a blow, I shall never get the house." Now when the given time had passed, they all went home together to their father, but they did not know how to get a good opportunity of showing off their powers and sat down to discuss the matter. Suddenly, a hare came running over the field. "Ah," cried the barber, "she comes just in the nick of time." He took up his bowl and his soap and got his lather by the time the hare came quite close. Then he soaped her and shaved her as she raced along, without giving her a cut or missing a single hair. His father, astonished, said,
"If the others don't look out, the house will be yours."
Before long, a gentleman came along in his carriage at full gallop. "Now, father, you shall see what I can do," said the farrier, and he ran after the carriage and tore the four shoes off the horse as he galloped along, then without stopping a second, shod him with new ones.
"You are a fine fellow indeed," said his father. "You know your business as well as your brother. I don't know which I shall give the house to at this rate."
Then the third one said,
"Let me have a chance too, father."
As it was beginning to rain, he drew his sword and swirled it round and round his head, so that not a drop fell on him, even when the rain grew heavier, so heavy that it seemed as if it were being poured from the sky out of buckets. He swung the sword faster and faster, and remained as dry as if he had been under a roof. His father was amazed and said,
"You have done the best. The house is yours." Both the older brothers were quite satisfied with this decision, and as they were all so devoted to one another, they lived together in the house and carried on their trades, by which they made plenty of money, since they were so perfect in them. They lived happily together to a good old age, and when one fell ill and died, the others grieved so much over him that they pined away, and soon after departed this life. Then, as they had been so fond of one another, they were all buried in one grave. Sounds to me like they could be the Three Musketeers. All for one and one for all. Stay tuned for more stories, folks, as Tristan's story time continues. I've heard stories of treasures being passed down from generation to generation, whether it's something small like a clock, a toy, or something else of even greater value. Some people have had farmlands passed down from their parents when they passed on, and even though they may not find gold, they realize that a good crop and the priceless value of a farm is one of the greatest treasures any family could ask for. And I'm sure anyone can understand the value of industrial farming, particularly those who live on country farms in the Midwest. I'll tell you why as I read The Farmer and His Sons by Aesop. A rich old farmer, who felt that he had not many more days to live, called his sons to his bedside.
"My sons," he said, "heed what I have to say to you. Do not on any account part with the estate that has belonged to our family for so many generations. Somewhere on it is hidden a rich treasure. I do not know the exact spot, but it is there, and you will surely find it. Spare no energy, and leave no spot unturned in your search."
The father died, and no sooner was he in his grave than the sons set to work digging with all their might, turning up every foot of ground with their spades and going over the whole farm two or three times. No hidden gold did they find, but at harvest time, when they had settled their accounts and had pocketed a rich profit far greater than that of any of their neighbors, they understood that the treasure their father had told them about was the wealth of a bountiful crop. And that in their industry had they found the treasure. Well, I'm sure you know what the moral of this story is, don't you? Industry is itself a treasure. When Tristan's story time first began in 2020, I figured I'd be great at telling stories. But I didn't want to stop there, and I asked myself this question. What else can I do to keep children and families entertained? So I thought and thought and thought and came up with a brilliant idea. Why not invite children and families to sing along to the songs that are on the show? So I decided in the very first episode that I would bring this song as a good way to help children and families sleep throughout the night. And this song, Rock-a-Bye Baby, should help. Now the lyrics are going to be slightly different, but the melody will still be the same. So let's relax and sing along to the song, Rock-a-Bye Baby.
Rock-a-Bye Baby on the treetop. When the wind blows, the cradle will rock. When the bough breaks, the cradle will fall. But mother will catch you. Drowsy, cozy. cozy and fair. Mother sits near in her rocking chair. Forward and back, the cradle she swings. Though baby sleeps, he hears what she sings.
Is anybody sleeping right now? We'll just quietly go to our next story. Stick around, we'll be right back.
Many of the poems by Edgar Allan Poe are filled with tragedy, particularly Annabel Lee and the Raven. Because when he was growing up, he had to deal with his father's desertion and the passing of his mother, which gave him such deep sadness that lasted for the rest of his life. This poem is probably his most famous one, and it's a great one to read out loud. You may recall that I read this poem during the special Halloween episode in 2020. The poem opens up on a man alone in his house, and he is very sad over the passing of Lenore. But when he hears a knock at his door, he finds that it isn't a person at all, but a bird called a raven. At first he is amused, but then he grows very sad. The bird only says this one word, nevermore. And that word reminds him that nothing can bring back his lost Lenore. Here is the timeless poem, The Raven, by Edgar Allan Poe. Once upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered weak and weary, over many a quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore, while I nodded nearly napping, suddenly there came a tapping, as of someone gently rapping, rapping at my chamber door. "'Tis some visitor," I muttered, tapping at my chamber door. "'Only this and nothing more." Ah, distinctly I remember, it was in the bleak December, and each separate dying ember wrought its ghost upon the floor. Eagerly I wished the morrow, vainly I had sought to borrow from my book surcase of sorrow, sorrow for the lost Lenore, for the rare and radiant maiden whom the angels named Lenore, nameless here forevermore, and the silken sad uncertain rustling of each purple curtain thrilled me, filled me with fantastic terrors never felt before. So that now, to still the beating of my heart, I stood repeating, "'Tis some visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door. Some late visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door. This it is, and nothing more." Presently my soul grew stronger, hesitating then no longer. "Sir," said I, "or madam, truly, your forgiveness I implore. But the fact is, I was napping, and so gently you came rapping. And so faintly you came tapping, tapping at my chamber door, that I scarce was sure I heard you. Here I opened wide the door. Darkness there and nothing more. Deep into that darkness peering, long I stood there wondering, fearing, doubting, dreaming dreams no mortal ever dared to dream before. But the silence was unbroken, and the darkness gave no token, and the only word there spoken was the whispered word, "Lenore!" This I whispered, and an echo murmured back the word, "Lenore!" Merely this and nothing more. Back into the chamber turning, all my soul within me burning, soon again I heard a tapping, somewhat louder than before. "Surely," said I, "surely that is something at my window lattice. Let me see, then, what thereat is, and this mystery explore."
Let my heart be still a moment and this mystery explore. 'Tis the wind and nothing more. Open here I flung the shutter, when with many a flirt and flutter, in there stepped a stately raven of the saintly days of yore. Not the least obeisance made he, not a minute stopped or stayed he, but with mien of lord or lady perched above my chamber door. Perched upon a bust of Pallas just above my chamber door. Perched and sat and nothing more. Then this ebony bird beguiling my said fancy into smiling, by the grave and stern decorum of the countenance it wore. Though thy crest be shorn and shaven, thou, I said, art sure no craven. Ghastly grim an ancient raven wandering from the nightly shore. Tell me what thy lordly name is on the night's Plutonian shore, quoth the raven.
Nevermore.
Much I marveled this ungainly fowl to hear discourse so plainly, though its answer little meeting, little revelancy bore. For we cannot help agreeing that no living human being ever yet was blessed with seeing bird above his chamber door, bird or beast upon the sculptured bust above his chamber door, with such name as Nevermore. But the raven sitting lonely on the placid bust spoke only that one word, as if his soul in that one word he did outpour. Nothing further than he uttered, not a feather than he fluttered, till I scarcely more than muttered, other friends have flown before. On the morrow he will leave me, as my hopes have flown before. Then the bird said,
Nevermore.
Startled at the stillness broken by reply so aptly spoken. Doubtless, said I, what it utters is its only stock and store. Caught from some unhappy master whom unmerciful disaster followed fast and followed faster till his songs one burden bore. Till the dirges of his hope that melancholy burden bore. Of never, nevermore. But the raven still beguiling all my sad soul into smiling. Straight I wheeled a cushioned seat in front of bird and bust and door. Then upon the velvet sinking, I betook myself to linking. Fancy unto fancy thinking what this ominous bird of yore. What this grim, ungainly, ghastly, gaunt, and ominous bird of yore. Meant in croaking,
Nevermore!
This I sat engaged in guessing, but no syllable expressing. To the fowl whose fiery eyes now burned into my bosom's core. This and more I sat divining, with my head at ease reclining, on the cushion's velvet lining that the lamplight gloated o'er, but whose velvet violet lining with the lamplight gloating o'er, she shall press, ah, nevermore. Then methought the air grew denser, perfumed from an unseen censer, swung by seraphim whose footfalls tinkled on the tufted floor. Wretch, I cried, thy God hath lent thee, by these angels he hath sent thee. Respite, respite, and nepenthe from thy memories of Lenore. Quaff, O quaff, this kind nepenthe, and forget this lost Lenore. Quoth the raven,
Nevermore.
Prophet, said I, thing of evil, prophet still, if bird or devil. Whether tempter sent, or whether tempest tossed thee here ashore. Desolate, yet all undaunted, on this desert land enchanted, on this home by horror haunted, tell me truly, I implore. Is there balm in Gilead? Tell me, I implore, quoth the raven.
Nevermore.
Prophet, said I, thing of evil, prophet still, if bird or devil. By that heaven that bends above us, by that God we both adore, tell this soul with sorrow laden, if within the distant Aden, it shall clasp a sainted maiden whom the angels name Lenore. Clasp a rare and radiant maiden whom the angels name Lenore, quoth the raven.
Nevermore!
Be that word our sign of parting, bird or fiend, I shrieked, upstarting. Get thee back into the tempest and the night's Plutonian shore! Leave no black plume as a token of that lie thy soul hath spoken. Leave my loneliness unbroken, quit the bust above my door. Take thy beak from out my heart, and take thy form from off my door, quoth the raven.
Nevermore.
And the raven, never flitting, still is sitting, on the pallid bust of Pallas just above my chamber door. And his eyes have all the seeming of a demon's that is dreaming.
and the lamplight o'er him streaming throws his shadow on the floor. And my soul from out that shadow that lies floating on the floor shall be lifted nevermore. Next time on Tristan Storytime, we take a closer look at the story of a little old woman who lived in a shoe. Then we read about a girl who refuses to spin in The Three Spinners. No spin here. Next, a mother crab tries to teach a young crab how to walk forwards instead of sideways in The Young Crab and His Mother, followed by a visit from Mary and her little lamb. And finally, Robert Louis Stevenson takes us up on a swing in the timeless classic poem, The Swing. That's next time on Tristan Storytime. Well, that just about wraps things up for today, but before we go, I want to remind you of a few last-minute pieces of information that I think you should know. First of all, if you enjoyed listening to this episode, there are plenty more exciting episodes on any of the podcast platforms you chose today. Also, you can follow Tristan Storytime on any of the social media platforms where you'll find video clips of stories I read on past shows every Thursday at 4 p.m. And you can find it all on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. In addition, you can find Tristan Storytime on Discord. And as you've noticed, music and sound effects will be included with every story I read. Every day, we're always finding new ways for all of us to grow together. Oh, and one last thing. If you have a classic family-friendly story idea that you'd like me to read on a future show, such as a picture book story, fairy tale, a fable from Aesop, or a poem, just send an email to TristanStorytime@gmail.com. That's TristanStorytime, all lowercase, @gmail.com. And that's without the apostrophe. Well, it's time for me to go, but I'll be back again soon. So until next time, I'm Tristan Gardner. Thank you for listening, and God bless, my friends. And remember to keep using your imaginations, because I use mine to help you use yours. Today's stories and nursery rhymes are The Tale of Mrs. Tittlemouse, written and illustrated by Beatrix Potter, published in 1910 by Frederick Warren and Company. The Three Brothers, taken from the book Childhood's Favorites and Fairy Stories, edited by Hamilton Wright Mabey, Edward Everett Hale, and William Byron Forbush. Editing assistance by Jenny Ellis Burdick, published in 1927 by the University Society, Incorporated. The Farmer and His Sons, taken from the book The Aesop for Children by Aesop. Pictures by Myla Winter. Published in 1919 by Rand McNally and Company. Rock-a-bye Baby. Written and composed by F.E.I. Canning. Originally printed in 1765. Music arrangement by The Green Orbs. The Raven. Originally written in 1845 by Edgar Allan Poe. Taken from the book The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe. Illustrated by Gustave Doré. Published in 1884 by Harper and Brothers.